good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. We're here.
We are calling our guests, setting up our computer, running around like chickens with our heads cut off. And you know what? That was our own fault because we were here early.
that's how we operate, though.
I know. We were messing around with the previous show.
We get total utilization
right, so
out of our time.
So much to talk about right now.
Oh, there is so many crazy things going on. Not the least of which is the Starbucks burning down at Berkeley. By the way, I reached out to our as soon as you can get in, that'd be awesome. Oh, but Bob's waiting because I again didn't do it the way we always do it because we never do it the same way. What the heck? So you're listening to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan,
and I'm Bill Cundiff.
The way we always do it, but we never do it the same way. And I'm Bob Martin, at any rate.
Yeah, it's like a last night at church. The song they were going to sing was 616 in the book. And he goes, oh, yeah, but I put that up there backwards. And I was like, okay, that's funny. And the lady behind me is like, so does he mean 615? What is he talking about? Is 516? She was agonizing back there.
He means 919.
It was actually pretty funny.
919.
I'm like, 616, huh? All jokes are not delivered in the same manner. speaking of which, all elections aren't received in the same manner either. What the heck? Got chaos, huh?
Total chaos.
Total chaos.
Should we thank our sponsors?
Oh, do it.
Yes, absolutely. Powerhouse Solar.
No chaos there.
No chaos at all. You want to go see Bruce and Sue, and if you have any solar needs, you want to go see them, talk to them, they can fix you up. Very professional.
Got to figure out if it's a good deal for you. They're really good at that. I know they came out to our old house.
Oh, yeah.
Gave us the rundown. And we were
showed us a whole plan. We were actually going to put a big array out in a field. And, they wrote it all up, drew it all out. And
How it would work, how much it would cover and all that. Because, irrigating our field using our well was like...
Yeah, it was gas expensive.
It was becoming gas expensive. It was not great.
Yeah. Go talk to them, and they'll do you a good deal. I guarantee it.
And they started here in, 2002, 2003? I'm not looking at it, but they've been here for a while, and bottom line is they're not going anywhere. I guess there are a lot of fly-by-night solar outfits, so we wanted to make sure you know they're the real deal.
Yeah, there's folks out there that want to do a lease and all that kind of thing. You don't want to get wrapped up in that. So give them a call, 530-275-5600. It's Powerhouse Solar.
Or on the web.
Or on the web at powerhousesolar.com.
Ding.
Ding. There you go.
Nice job, Willis.
He was making me sweat. I had to listen to his entire message on his answering machine before he picked up.
You're like, oh, we're not doing that again, are we?
He was sweating you, Bob, making sure that you're on the ball this morning.
Always super spooky.
I was out doing Windows, so, you know.
That's right, because you're what, 2 o'clock?
Yeah. Actually, we have pretty nice weather here in Chicago today, so we're in the 40s, 45.
That's too cold.
Wow.
That's cold for us.
So balmy in Chicago, huh?
Yeah, we're having a good time.
Very balmy.
Yeah, dodging bullets and everything.
I mean,
better doing the nice weather than, climate.
Well, yeah, after, I talked to you the other night and you told me you saw Bill Ayers where you were having coffee. I was like, wow.
That's like 2 years ago, yeah. We're out at Ghirardelli's Ice Cream. And he's sitting out there having coffee with one of his buddies.
Ew.
Just a guy in the neighborhood.
Kind of a mixer, as you can see.
Yeah, no kidding.
He didn't scream, he's got a bomb!
Everybody already knew.
Oh, yeah. I ran.
It was implied.
It was a quick hot fudge sunny with bananas, and I was out of there.
Oh my gosh. So we should tell people who you are. This is going to be kind of it's a lot of stressful stuff out there today. Every day. There's just a lot of stressful stuff.
Every day, so it's...
people are losing their
minds. I'll get out my serious voice. And what we are going to talk about, I guess I initially had made inquiries with you. We had chatted for a little bit about talking about our new appointees and the Supreme Court. We can start there on our national security interest and how that should play out, so...
Yeah, and the person you're listening to is Bruce Moran. He is a National Senior Advisor for Security Solutions Technology, and they focus on strategic planning for national security issues. So he works with the government, departments, agencies, think tanks, corporations. He's a project guy.
Yeah. good humor guy on the street when I need a coconut ice cream. Got to cover all the bases.
And he can spot a terrorist when he knows his name and he's been well publicized.
Oh man, yeah, you're telling me the chocolate eclairs you got to really watch out for.
Stay away from the eclair.
There's a live one.
It doesn't have that that custard filling that I remember from my first job working at Winchell's Donuts.
Oh, man, those were great.
Don't eat the crumb donuts.
So, as we're looking at the Supreme Court, you know, we're looking at Neil coming in out of Colorado, Gorsuch, and I think it's an excellent pick. He's a family man, good Episcopalian background. National security-wise, he's on the ball. That's my bottom line on it. If I want to go into his economic understanding of how, you know, our country's run, he backed Little Sisters of the Poor, as you know. And if you're looking at the Little Sisters of the Poor, that's the Catholic hospital system. And, well, there's over 600 Catholic hospitals in the United States. So when you're making a judgment on one small group, you're making a judgment on all the people. And I think they run like 1,400 retirement kind of homes too. So you're affecting a lot of people.
Oh yeah, we've got a hospital and a fairly large retirement home here in Reading as well.
Yeah, the nuns and the priests really disciplined me when I was a kid, so I can really appreciate that.
our nuns were really good at basketball.
So it was very good for me, you know, inner city. And, you know, we all played ball together and things like that. And the nuns would come to the games, and the priests would be around and help, you know, guide us in our times of need. You know, so
I got to stay at the convent with my...
All our friends. And it was a... It was a very positive experience, and it was very helpful for me to develop the discipline back then to carry on to do this kind of work later, because it gave me basic discipline, and later I developed the critical thinking skills to go in to do crisis readiness and crisis preparedness and national security. Those are all the foundations you need to come from a good household, good parents, and, you know, make sure your life is stable in a way, even though everything around you can be in chaos. So...
Yeah, because if you bring the chaos inside, nothing good happens. Yeah, I stayed in the convent when my grandfather died when I was like in fourth grade, and our nuns were fun. I mean, they played basketball and they, you know, they ran around. They were pretty fun, and they had
dodgeball.
Well, you got your own room at the convent. Yeah. I had my own room. It was like, wow, this is awesome. And I was the oldest of five kids, so obviously things were always a little bit. You know, moving around at our house. You could never find the tape. You could never find the scissors. You know, that stuff was always someplace else. It was never in the drawer where it was supposed to be. I went to, when I was in the convent, I had to do a project. And I'm like, sister, could I get some tape? And she goes, oh, it's right there in that drawer. I opened it. Oh, tape, scissors, ruler. It was all in the same drawer. I'm like, I'm doing this. I'm coming back.
I'm going to be a nun.
I don't think that's actually a calling, but...
Become a nun, always know where the scissors are.
But it changed me.
But getting back to that,
I
was working on a Christian genocide. And we'll come back to more of the
we digress.
Appointees.
Yeah.
And the Catholic Church was helping support that. And that was what we knew about 5 years ago. And then Congress had enacted about 3 years ago laws, or I would call it more of a resolution to acknowledge Christian genocide was happening in Iraq and Syria. So one of my friends here is the president of the Syrian Christian organization, Marty Uriman, and we knew exactly. His mom was stationed in Erbil, helping the Marines, and then down in Baghdad. So I think she's still there. She missed a wedding. He had a wedding last year. He just had a baby. So, I mean, that's how serious it is. People need to understand that. I'll get serious now. Christians are being persecuted, and it's genocide. So we got to take that under consideration. I think as we look at President Trump, he understands that completely, and that'll be part of his program. He got the safety zones he wants to set up there and help, you know, stabilize the area rather than have a bunch of people from those areas become refugees, and that's a crisis we're dealing with now. But let's get back to... Well, I want to get back to our appointees, Ian. Do you have any ideas about Rex Tillerson? You know, I think that was an excellent choice. given the situation we have today. And the last time I think about a person appointed like that, they appointed two envoys during the it was a Truman and then the Roosevelt era, and that was Avril Harriman and Paul Hoffman, and they ran the Marshall Plan. So this is kind of that switch in leadership, switch in thinking. If you look at what they're doing at the Heritage Foundation, ATR, and the Wall Street Journal, they call it Economic Freedom Index. They're shifting back to the business model, how to get people, the ordinary people on the ground taken care of, rather than doing economic development programs that usually fluff up the people in official positions in the foreign countries, but it doesn't really help the people on the ground. So they're trying to get back to the basic principles of cost-benefit analysis. And what that entails, well, do you have any ideas on that? Because I can talk a little bit more, but...
No, keep going.
I'm just kind of curious with the current appointments, as far as the national security, do you feel pretty confident that this is going to be a good team to...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about Rex. So what's Rex, what's his capability? He knows everybody around the world, and he's been to a lot of the countries. And what do oil companies do? They build. Mm-hmm. Then they got to build in areas, and what do they have to do? Provide security.
Sure.
So he knows the security dimension, top down. Then he knows how to protect the rigs or work with the local governments. We have, like I said, since the Marshall Plan, we haven't had people of this caliber come in to actually run the State Department. They actually knew business.
Right.
And knew how to take care of business.
Well, everybody complains.
Just a second ago, we're talking about economic freedom. And that's what President Trump is now talking about now. He's saying jobs, 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 jobs. That's the same thing as economic freedom for a third world country or a developing country. It's
sure.
Jobs, 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 jobs. That's how they get off the ground. They create market hub centers. You know, they create a lot of jobs in a small area, and cottage industries pop up, and kiosks pop up, and you have a lot of different really wonderful economic development in the small circles that make it big for a shopping center later.
So going over there and setting up shop, getting business, or, you know, say oil companies or whatever go over, it branches out. I would think that the local communities then would be pretty receptive to companies coming in and expanding and creating jobs and creating opportunity for the locals.
How about,
that's right.
How about, boys, we talk about
that in terms of public-private partnerships that you're talking about?
Yeah,
does happen, and that's one of the benefits of having Rex Tillerson. What I'm talking about is how they're going to change the dimension of the whole State Department that way.
Right.
That'd be awesome. Hold on 1 second. We'll come back. We'll chat more about that.
Okay.
Because we are already tardy. We started tardy. We're going to continue tardy. There'll be 2 hours of tardiness today here at We the People Tardiness.
We will be back.
We're chatting with our guest, Bruce Moran, who's a national security expert. And, you know, we like to have experts that aren't boring, so we'll bring him back here in just a second.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
State Department theme song.
There you go.
That's perfect. So what we're talking about is the Department of State being the pivot point for national security overseas,
mm-hmm.
and the business model being the, probably you can say it's the new mission for them. And as I had summed up earlier, the last time we seen that was during the end of the Roosevelt and beginning of the Truman administration with the Marshall Plan. So you had brought in Avril Harriman and Paul Hoffman, who actually ran it. They were separate and distinct from the State Department because they knew they could get usurped. I don't know if you knew that. They had their own office.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they knew how the State Department operated, and they had their own office, and they'd reported directly to the president.
Well, that was a good thing.
Yeah, well, same thing's going to happen with Rex. You know, he's going to have to figure out how to re-educate, retask, and reorientate the mission of the State Department to conform to what they need for economic freedom. And have it from bottom up.
Run
that way, and it's how the diplomats are going to have to change the way they're talking to other officials in foreign countries.
Do you see him going in and kind of cleaning house right off the bat and getting... Because, you know, we're hearing all these stories of people quitting and, you know, people not doing what they're supposed to be doing and not honoring the president. I mean, I don't think he's... I think he's kind of a no-nonsense guy. Do you think he'll go in and really clean it out?
Yes. In simple terms, yes.
Okay.
In bureaucratic terms, it's going to take some time because you have people at all different levels and all different forms of operation. Not only you have it domestically with the State Department, but you have all the embassies and consulates overseas that need to be understanding the new mission of the State Department.
Right. Everybody has to be on the same page. That's the thing. It just seems like they're all on different pages on how they think things ought to be run.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's really been done like this for about 30, 40 years, so how you go about and actually run a State Department in terms of a business operation. As you know, we had different people coming in from the Senate, and, you know, they have their ideas about how to run it, but it's according to the old bureaucratic ways of
the way
the department's been run for 30, 40 years.
And that's really what we need to get away from. Obviously, it hasn't worked very well.
Yes, sir.
Well,
I'll talk to you officially.
Well,
I'm talking to another.
And let's face it, it was run by Hillary, who was busy fundraising for the Clinton Foundation on her own server, blah, 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 blah. And regardless of where you fall on that whole thing, mm-hmm. none of that sounds like how you want your tax dollars used to run a really important agency in our government.
Well, and it totally influences your foreign mission, too, in all those countries. So
so how many people have bailed out of there, and what's up with that?
Right now, working for the State Department, I don't know if you know that, it's 68,000 people.
Dang.
So you have a lot of people that are professionals and are diplomats and are support staff and are on desk. You call them a desk that handles, you know, in the State Department at Foggy Bottom, that handles that part of it. Then they have the desk, and they have the actual mission. That would be the consulate or the embassy. So you have these different factions. And within the embassy, too, now here's what people, I think this is good for people to understand, they have those functions. And the foreign policy function is what? We have intelligence, we have diplomatic, we have military, we have economic. Now, with the change of the mission, we're going to be focusing on the economic side. And it's economic freedom, I would call it, and that's the better way to look about how to handle the people on the ground, the ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Donald Trump got elected, and that's how it doesn't change anywhere in the world. It's just the same thing. Got to help the ordinary people on the ground. That's what grows your economy. That's how your economy prospers. That's how economic freedom existed from, you know, John Locke, and we go back to our own history and our country and the formative stages of understanding how this came about, you know, versus a collective way versus an individual sovereign way.
Right.
Ayn Rand. So we have these ideas inculcated into our culture, which are very helpful for other nations. And like I was saying, it's the third world countries, the developing countries, also the failed states. That's where it's most likely neglected and has a real hard chance of coming on board. So if you look at, you know, we figured there were seven hot point countries, Yemen, you know, that would be one of those hot points. There's competing factions in Yemen, and that's Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So, you know, if you look at a hot point, you want to say, and if you look at ISIS and Al-Qaeda, they both declared war on the United States. Osama bin Laden, I believe it was in 1998, he wrote a fatwa. The fatwa was 30 pages long.
Wow.
Yeah, so these are the kind of things we're looking at. You know, and Rex Tillerson has the idea about how he wants to handle it, and then you have it integrated with what? It's the Department of Homeland Security for border security, and that's what we're talking about, the refugee crisis, and then we're also talking about how it integrates with what? The Department of Defense and how they're going to execute the operations program for Iraq and Syria. And he asked them to put it together in 30 days an operations way of handling what's going now in Iraq, because we have that big undertaking in Mosul right now. So that's their, I would say their capital's in Raqqa, but that's their second biggest base of operations. So once that falls, you know, Omar the Chechenian was killed like 6 months ago. He was their biggest operational guy in that sector. He came in from Chechnya, and he changed his name to Omar the Chechenian, you know, Omar. So a lot of these people coming in from these countries are going back, and that's what President Trump and Mike Flynn are really worried about. I mean, I am too. We're really concerned about how this is playing out and how these people are getting across our borders. It's not necessarily by flights. It's by coming in the southern border, northern border. You know, they come in different ways. It's not always what people think it to be. And they can be spies for them. And they have IDs made for them. So if you see something coming across in a green card, and maybe somebody is using a false ID, and you can't trace it back. So if you have those seven countries that don't have ways to trace back identities, you have a huge problem.
Well, yeah, I heard the other day that I think it's in Iraq or Iran, one of those countries over there, they crank out tens of thousands of passports. They have
Syria,
the equipment.
Iraq, because they took over the government, and in Iraq they had the passport-making machine.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So, how? I mean, that's going to be a huge problem.
Oh, you want one here? Here's one for you. Right. Where do you want to go? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I'm joking about it, but it's so serious, it's so bad, and it's so out of hand that we got to get a handle on it. And President Trump knows that, and Mike Flynn know that, and they're working with their hands tied behind their backs because it's taking so long for everybody to get approved and to get into their jobs. You know, not only do we have to approve, you know, the appointees that are going into the cabinet, you got undersecretaries too.
Right.
You got people in that need to come in right away. And if you got pushback from the bureaucracy or other insiders or from, you know, say, people from the Democratic Party, that's their position, you know, and they don't want to follow an order, then you got a real problem unless you get your people in office to really move the mission forward.
But isn't that
and give a presidential directive and make sure it's being carried out? And I don't mean carried out just that people understand it. You have to make sure it's carried out operationally.
Right.
And you got to check to see if it's being enforced. That takes a lot of time and effort and a lot of people to do those jobs.
Well, I think the delay in one respect could be a good thing, because you're going to find out during this delay who's on board with your ideas and who isn't, so that when you do when you do get your guys in place, you know who to replace or at least keep an eye on. Don't you? What do you think of that?
Partially true, but the real players will not come forward. They'll have all the other people do it for them.
That's true. They'll lurk.
Right.
Yeah.
But
they're going to be the ones who cause the action to happen, but they're not going to come forward. And they're going to be the ones who do the insidious type of behavior to usurp, undermine, I would call it the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
And the president's executive orders.
But
I would
still,
say the national security matter of that.
But they're still,
from my perspective.
If they're in a position of leadership, though, currently, and there's maybe subordinates out there, you know, bucking the system, aren't they ultimately responsible for those people and have to answer for that?
Well, that's what we call obstructionist. And that's what was the biggest obstructionist time we've seen in our history? Well, we had two of them, but the one that was during the Civil War.
Civil War?
Yeah, that was probably the biggest one.
Hmm.
And he had this kind of thing happening back then. So if you look at that obstructionist problem, that's why you're getting to what we're looking at, the nuclear option in the Supreme Court. Because they changed it three times. It was a supermajority, and then they brought it down to 60 votes. Then they bring it down to, you know, just need the nuclear option, which is the you know, one vote over. So, which could actually be Mike Pence, you know, or
yeah.
somebody, you know,
yeah.
the president.
Yeah, what a dumb move.
I don't think it's so.
That's like that's like hubris, you know, thinking that you're going to be in power forever, so you might as well do stuff like that.
Oh, no, you know why they did a nuclear option? Because they thought Ruth Ginsburg was going to retire.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah, so they put it in place, and she didn't retire, and now they're sitting up with their backs against the wall. Because if she does retire, then they're really, or Kennedy, or,
ding, ding,
you know,
too.
Clarence yeah. Thomas said he might, so, but that's one for one, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We can actually replace two more that would be more of a, I would say, a constitutional lawyer, following the dictates of the Constitution, as
sure.
founded by the Cut of Seven Principles, as brought forth by our founding fathers.
Rather than people who are legislating from the bench.
Yeah,
which is making everyone
from the bench,
crazy.
Or thinking as a document that can be changed.
Oh, yeah, true.
You know, politically, to suit the times. And that's what happened in the Seattle case. You know, the federal judge in Seattle had wrote, I would call it a dictate of his personal...
interpretation.
Yeah, his personal philosophy, ideology, and that should be separate and distinct from what you're doing to support the president's executive order. So then this is another one of this... these kind of things that are obstructionist.
Right.
And you can look at it as taking into account the people that are refugees, but it doesn't take into account if we get attacked in a national security matter he's trying to deal with. You know, there's two ways of looking at it. But the president is commander-in-chief, executive orders written to take care of the American people, not to take care of refugees. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. So... you know, who's going to be on first base with, you know, going to second after you hit the ball? I'm not going to be on the base with the judge. You want to start from home plate, getting your, you know, top swingers in there. And we're talking about, you know, Jim Mattis, Jim Kelly, Rex Tillerson. You want those players up there for national security. You don't want a federal judge dictating how to, you know, national security's run. You know, that's pretty bad.
Do you think
from my perspective? You know, I think it's a solid perspective, and it's sound and practical, but in terms of the disposition of federal judges, because they're there for life, I think that, I don't know how you call a federal judge to on task for that. That's what I'm saying.
Right. All right. We've got to take a quick break here. Thank our advertisers.
Okay. Good.
And we're here with Bruce Moran, National Security Advisor. He's actually in Chicago. I shouldn't say we're here with him. We're here with him on the phone. Gotta love the phone, huh? Without that, yeah. We'd just have to talk to each other every week.
That'd be tough. Spend a lot of money on airline tickets.
We all know how that would work out. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Your new theme song, Bruce.
For sure. Or China.
Nice.
So, Bruce, we're talking about
good one, Bob.
Talking about these judges. Do you feel that, or do you think the whole judge obstructionist judges are going to plague this administration?
Is it going to be Mission Impossible?
Yeah, every time he tries to execute something, that one of these federal judges is going to sign some delay?
I don't think that's going to be the case. It's on certain particular issues like this, where they can have input to stall an executive order, but I don't think you'll see many. If it becomes an obstructionist, then the Supreme Court's going to have to step in, you know, and that's when you have Neal in there and Roberts, and they'll have to make a decision on it, saying, you know, you're bringing in your own demagoguery and your own ideology. It's not what the courts are for.
Right.
And I don't know if what the Supreme Court needs to do to stop it at that point.
That's a decision that's
about the tenure and what the role of the federal judge is and what they're supposed to do in a fair and equitable way. If they're bringing their own personal philosophy and ideology, demagoguery, then you're creating a whole different vacuum that may be against the Constitution in carrying out an executive order.
Right. Well, this
so that's what I'm talking about. This executive order and these commander-in-chief, if they're doing these things to counter the Constitution, then I don't know what this might set a whole new precedent in identifying what this really means. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know what the legal talking points are on that on both sides.
Well, it's unfortunate, but the appeal on this is going to the Ninth Circuit, which I think we all know how they're going to rule, and so then it'll just get bounced up to the Supreme Court. So
you never know with those guys.
It is a big delay. I mean, this you don't get stuff shoved through the Supreme Court in a timely fashion. Now they get to pick what they hear and in what order, don't they? The Supreme Court,
of course, but they can make it a priority if it's a national security problem like this is.
Right, right.
So this is definitely a national security problem, and it'll come up sooner than later. So by procrastinating with the obstructionist in there for Neal, it's not going to look good for them. No way, and you know, no way can you look at it as them looking to abide by the Constitution, the principles of the Constitution, and all the national security problems that are based around it that they're not taking care of.
Mm-hmm.
You can lay some of the blame, if something happens, on the Democratic Party now, because they're not getting other people in to take care of and run the government, the federal government, like they need to.
Right, and I see that as something that I think is going to backfire on them in the next elections. I think if they keep this up, people are going to be sick of it. And you know, the ones that are up for re-election next time might have a problem.
Yeah, and
surprise.
Neil's from an area where a lot of them are up for re-election. So if they give him a rough time, they know what the consequences are.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to talk about it in that kind of way, but I just want them to do the right thing on national security. And all this obstructionist kind of policy they're, you know, inculcating into the system, whether it be in Congress or in the federal judiciary, I think that's not right from my perspective, because I look at the bottom line. We got to, and overseas, people don't even think about it. They're just thinking about refugees coming in. When you're screwing around with, and I'm going to call it screwing around with national security, you're not making the firm determination that all our people that are living overseas are subject to the same retributions, because these people are able to exact carnage on our own people, American citizens overseas.
But see,
talking about covert operations, people working in SOG teams. We just lost a Navy SEAL in Yemen, and you know, President went over there, and you know, it's very hard on us. So,
but see, they're not talking about that when they, you know, talk about delaying these cabinet picks.
They
don't recognize, at least from what I've seen, they don't recognize
people dying.
They don't recognize the possibility of bringing people over here as a security risk, which flabbergasts me, to be honest.
They're all marching around in the airport with "We love refugees, we love immigrants," and I mean, I get that in a broad sense, but why? I mean, I've had conversations with people who just flat say, "I don't understand why we have to know all about these people. They're just coming here to flee violence." People actually believe that.
I mean, we had, just take a simple case of Somalia, because they're on the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had those people up in Minneapolis, St. Paul, with the knives.
Oh, yeah.
And they were, you know, just
well, so everybody knows. Yeah, everybody knows Somalia is just a vacation destination if you want to go have a good time. I mean, I don't know why we let anybody in from Somalia. I mean, I understand they're having basically a civil war over there,
right.
And the place is run by warlords, and that's unfortunate. But at some point, don't we have
Al Qaeda now? It's ISIS. I mean, they have both, and they have competing factions there in Yemen. So, and as you understand it, was stated earlier that Al Qaeda and ISIS had declared war in the United States.
Right.
It doesn't matter what hat you have on. We know that these people want to kill us.
Exactly.
Well, how big a joke is California right now on a scale of 1 to 10? Are we hammering like 20 right now in the make fun of people who are complete idiots arena?
Oh, you're talking about the riots that are supposed to be protests.
No, I was actually talking about how we're going to, you know, they voted to become a sanctuary state.
Oh, now they're going to separate.
Go ahead and let them all in. Yeah, let them all in. We will take care of them all in California and then become our own country.
That is terrible.
Yeah, it is awful. And
I mean, to even have them go there and think that it's important to them in a time of crisis of our country, not only between the parties, but what needs to be done for national security, for them to even come up with something like that, it's unfathomable to me that they can even think that way to distract from the real issues, the solutions. If I look at what's going on in Chicago, we have two people dying every day from the gunshots, you know, and we have crime and drugs, and it's filled. That sector is all filled in Southern California, too, with the same problems.
Mm-hmm.
They got the big drug cartels running through there rampantly. You know, they have huge problems. And they're not saying how they're going to deal with that. And that's what we're talking about. How are they going to deal with that? What are their solutions? They have no solutions. We're trying to come up with plausible, common, practical solutions. And they're not saying anything like that.
Yeah.
They want to become independent. So, okay, what does that do for you?
Yeah. Well, their solution is to take in more people because obviously it's not a problem at all.
Well, I guess
which is just crazy.
I guess another issue I have is when they talk about refugees, you know, by definition, a refugee is somebody who comes here because they're fleeing some problem in their own country. So we house them until the problem is fixed, and then shouldn't they go back at that point? Otherwise, they're not refugees, they're immigrants.
People seeking asylum get to stay here for a year.
Right, but does anybody ever leave?
They have to get a green card, and that's the law. But
mm-hmm.
What's going on, and I think, let's go back to the cause of this whole thing, and this was my stake in the game 5 years ago. ISIS was formed. They drew the line in the sand. They wanted regime change for Assad. And what the regime change came consequences. The average person, average Iraqi, average Syrian person wasn't taken care of. First they became homeless. Then they were fleeing. Then they became destitute. Then they were all congregated in certain spots. Some of them went. There's a bunch of them in Jordan right now. They go down Route 1, you know, from, it's their safety zone. But then they're in, southern Turkey. But we know that. But the thing happened was, it was the UN, European Union, and the United States. They think that regime change for Assad was correct. Whether you accept or reject regime change, it's not the problem. It's just the consequences of all the refugees, all these people from Iraq and Syria that were left homeless, they weren't taken care of. President Trump talked about a safety zone, and that should have been established 3-4 years ago. So the people had a place to go and have a place to stay. They have food, shelter,
Again, it's temporary.
I would have armed them.
It's a temporary
situation.
You want to
arm the people to go back and take their homes back, to take their land back.
Right.
To fight ISIS. And that wasn't done.
Well, that's my point.
I mean, that's the consequence of poor decision-making from the UN, from the European Union and from the United States.
Well, doesn't it say something too that when we look at the refugee migration, that the majority of them, now you can tell me if this is true or not, but aren't the majority of them like 18 to 25 year old males? That's not a typical
They're fighting age
immigration problem. That's or a refugee problem. Otherwise, it'd be women and children.
I don't know the exact numbers, but I would say your bottom line, what you're saying is, the people who are able to fight should stay there and fight
sure.
for their own country, for their own freedom, for their own, that's to get their homes back, to get their land back.
Right. It's not our
fight.
Why
are they running and expecting other countries to take care of them?
Correct.
Well, the other thing is,
I don't know the numbers, that's what I'm saying, but what you're saying, the truth in what you're saying is, we made big mistakes, and we had to make sure that we were providing them with arms so they can fight ISIS.
Right.
And the Kurds took it up, the Peshmerga. And we supported them, but we also need to support the Christians that were being persecuted, and eventually their homes were marked by ISIS. I don't know if you knew this. They came around, marked all their homes the day before.
Ooh,
yeah,
that's not good.
So it's like the Holocaust.
Right,
they came and started persecuting them. They took their children.
Hold on, we've got to take a really quick break here before the
sex slaves.
Top of the hour.
They started crucifying people and roasting them. And all kinds of different things that happened. You saw the beheadings. I mean, that's what they did. That was genocide.
Absolutely.
That's not talked about.
Hold on one second, Bruce. We've got to come back with that.
About it. I mean, some of the Assyrians and some of the Rockies talk about them being...
We'll be right back in 2 minutes. We got to take a really quick break here. We'll be at the top of the hour. Bob's killing it on the immigration songs. Okay, so Bruce, go back to the part where we were so rudely cutting you off.
Well,
and make that point again, because it's really important.
The idea about not having a safety zone established when we knew that the ordinary citizens first became homeless, then they became destitute.
Right.
And then they went into a period where they fled into Jordan and then fled into Turkey. But at that time, it wasn't as bad. I don't think people realize this is the biggest refugee crisis since World War II. So we were up to 8 to 9 million people. So when they had the regime change strategy, they didn't provide to take care of the ordinary people. And that's what President Trump is emphasizing here. That's how he won the election. The average person needs jobs, but you got to take care of the average person. What was he talking about? Law and order. And over there, it's safety and security. And then what he talks about on foreign policy, it's stabilization. You have to have these countries stabilized so that people can feel comfortable with their governments in their provincial areas. We call them states here, but they call them provinces there. So that's the bottom line. And they didn't provide for this. And I was saying the UN, the European Union, and the United States policy didn't take into account what happened to the average person on the ground. And what we just finished talking about right when the commercials happened was the genocide and how the doors were being marked by ISIS of all the Christians the day before. They come through there, and then they would rape the women. They would persecute the males, crucify them, roast them, behead them, and the kids they use as sex slaves. So that's the genocide portion of the problem that exists there, and I think they should have refugee status and asylum here in the United States.
And
they should be given a priority.
And this is basically Muslim on Muslim crime, correct?
No, it's Muslim on Christian crime.
Okay, so
they came along glued when they.
So these are the same Muslims that we're trying to keep out of our country that we love so much that these folks are saying we're persecuting. See, that's the part I don't get.
Now the Muslim situation is different in and of itself, you know, and we have to talk about our terrible planning of how the refugee situation happened. We terribly planned, and these people, like I said, they became homeless, then they had to travel someplace, and they couldn't find jobs, so they were looking for jobs, then they became destitute, and they needed food, shelter, and water that wasn't provided for them. So you take about a year and a half period, 2 years, and this was the largest refugee crisis since World War II, and you get up to 8-9 million people. That's a huge problem, and nobody addressed that.
And I don't argue that point. However,
no, I'm saying it's a humanitarian crisis they never addressed.
Right.
But why can't we address it?
As bad can be.
Right. We need to address that now, but we need to address it over there. I just don't think we bring them over here.
Oh no, I'm saying the same thing.
Yeah. You guys are saying the same thing.
That can be established.
Correct.
And that's the areas where you bring food, shelter, and you can provide arms for the males.
Absolutely. We've got to take a break to talk the hour.
No, we're done.
Oh, we are.
Mr. Moran is going about his day without us from here on out.
Ah.
He's going to clean windows or watch the Super Bowl or
clean downstairs.
Fiddle around.
Yep, and then go to the corner and, you know, we can get.
Yeah, go spy on your local terrorist.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Bruce, for coming
thanks,
on
Bruce,
with us.
Thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome. God bless America. God bless you for having the program, We the People. And God bless our whole country, everybody in it. And let's get this resolved.
Absolutely. And when, as this thing develops, we'll have you back.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we're coming back with Dr. Lyle Rapacki. We're going to take a different spin on the same thing. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And good afternoon to you. Happy Stupid Bowl.
Oh, don't be a hater.
Oh, sorry.
Don't be a hater. Come on, a lot of people out there still watch football. Even though so many of them are not patriotic.
No, I saw the best meme ever. I saw it. I'll post it online. How dare the NFL put up stadium walls to keep people out who didn't buy a ticket? # not my Super Bowl.
There you have it right there.
There's a protest for everything.
Sure there is.
Yeah, if you want to be mad about it, there is something you can just... You know.
Oh, there's always, yeah.
Throwing shoes at your TV is out though. Now, though. You need to go burn down a, you know, business. Oh,
uh-oh.
Something bad happened.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
No, I just keep talking
and pay no attention. I'm trying to get wild.
it's Oz.
We have entered the
Great
Wizard of Oz.
Powerful.
Somebody pulled back the curtain. How confusing.
You may lose your headphones momentarily. Just keep talking. Trust me.
They're going to fly off my head, or they're going to go silent?
Yeah, no, I mean, you're going to lose the audio.
Oh, okay. I thought they were going to fly off my head. I was kind of excited. I was going to watch Bill more closely.
Yeah.
Because he wears his backwards, so
I know it.
I just wanted to see what it looked like.
Left is right and right is
will
left.
It get tangled in our glasses and pull them off our face as well?
Yeah,
he,
boy. Hey,
well, obviously the second hour is much more exciting than the first hour.
A lot of stuff going on the second hour. First off, let's thank our sponsor, Powerhouse Solar.
Yeah, do it.
They will do all your solar, commercial, residential. They do it all. Get a hold of Bruce and Sue over there. The phone number is 530-275-5600. They'll do a crack job for you. Been in town a long time. Very professional. So Powerhouse Solar, they're the guys to go to. You can also get them online at powerhousesolar.com.
Ta-da!
There you are.
And, you know, if you would like to support the programming that you're listening to here for the 2 hours every Sunday afternoon at We the People, we'd be happy to have you.
Happy to have you.
You can give us a phone call. My phone number is 530-515-7135. And Bill is almost the same.
Yeah, 515-7703.
Check.
Yeah.
And you can find us online. All that good stuff's on there. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Yeah, there's actually a little sponsor section you can go to and
yeah,
have all our
you could even just put in $5 if you want. You could do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And if you, our emails are on there, so if you have ideas about programs or you've like read a great book and you'd like to hear more from the author or stuff like that, we would love your ideas. That's where we find all this good stuff. Last week, our student down there, third-year student at UC Irvine, Peter Van Voris, holy cow, we had like over 600 people on Wednesday listened to the archived program
of him. Well, didn't we have almost 2,000 people last week? Or I mean, it was crazy how many people tune in on the archives.
All around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that interesting? A student at Irvine talking about what's going on with the millennials that are actually conservative and how victimized they are. Fascinating that that would draw so many listeners.
Yeah.
So, you never know what's out there. I find a lot of fun things on Twitter, but I know a lot of people are on Facebook. So if you read something and think you'd like to know more about it, shoot us that information. We'd love it. That's why we have such good variety, because people send us things.
What do we have on the second hour?
We have been all the behind the curtain over there, has been happening with Dr. Lyle Rapacki. He is a private sector intelligence, behavioral analysis, and threat assessment specialist. God knows we could use the behavioral analysis thing a lot. Yeah,
he's got to be he's got lots to work
lately,
with lately.
That is a target-rich environment. Since June of 2010, Dr. Rapacki has provided selected members of the Arizona legislature intelligence briefings on border security and threats to Arizona's sovereignty. He's got a really long resume with all sorts of good things in it. He's an all-around smart guy, but he's fun, so we have him back on a regular basis.
Yeah, he can handle our buffoonery.
Yeah, just being an all-around smart guy doesn't actually get you through the door twice. You have to actually be kind of fun. And he's just full of information. He sends out all sorts of good things, and you can find that on the page for today. And I guess we should tell you who we are. I'm Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Yeah, see, every time we do it just a little bit different, just to keep you thrown off your game. So,
Lila's on the phone.
Now that you guys have decided, what did we decide? Did we land on Skype? Did we wind up with the phone?
No, we're doing the phone.
All right, we landed on the phone. A lot of struggle going on around here.
Yeah.
Look like an MMA cage match over there.
Anybody could do it, let me tell you. We're trained professionals.
Bill and I are on the other side of the table. We can't touch any of that. All right.
Skype is having issues.
Oh, Skype is sick. So, what's happening over there in Arizona land?
Well, Aaron and Robert and everybody, how are you? I finally got through. I was beginning to think that you didn't want me after you called me at midnight.
Oh, don't ever think that.
Yeah, after I emailed you at midnight the other day and said, hey, you want to come on? And it was like, hey, why isn't he not answering me back?
Well, I send my check out faithfully every month so you'd be my friend. And I thought, well, maybe something happened.
Hey, Lyle, I love you, man. Don't think that way.
Okay, I'll feel better. Tomorrow in my counseling session with my counselor, I'll feel better.
Yeah.
Hey, so how handy has that behavioral
analysis? He's been triggered.
We triggered him, that's right. But can you have microaggression over the phone? Don't you have to see that? I don't really understand what it is, actually.
Oh, you guys. You know, this is good. I needed this today because my Packers are not in the Super Bowl, so I've been in a depressed state, and now this is lifting me out of it.
So you're posting under hashtag not my Super Bowl too? Not just because of the fence, not because of the walls.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So what are we talking about today?
Well, you know, we've been...
I want to know why you live in Arizona, but you're a Packers fan.
that would make a show.
Bob has needs.
I will even tell you that I went down to the frozen tundra, and I actually touched it one time years ago. Yes, sir, I did.
Yeah, that was all you needed.
Let me tell you, I was good for life. I was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I had just spoken just south of there. I'm sorry, just north of there, and I had a few hours to kill before I got on the plane again, and I thought, oh, you gotta be kidding, I'm this close, and so I drove into Packer Stadium, there was nobody around, I went to the gift store, and walked through there, and just was like a kid in a candy shop, and the lady got talking to me, and then a grounds gatekeeper came up, and they were just talking, all three of us, and I said, he said, have you ever been here? And I said, no, this is just great. I said, the closest I came is I played football at NAU, Northern Arizona University, and my coach, Coach John Simak, played for the Packers. Well, they immediately lit up and said, we know who Coach Simak is, and you played for him? And I said, yes, I did. Well, come on down. And I thought they were kidding, but I got to go touch
down on the field, court. Huh?
Whoa. Oh, I couldn't talk for many, many, many minutes, which is quite a thing. And I just stood there. It was big. So thank you for bringing me on today. This is good. It's picked up my spirits. I'm happy again. So what do you want to talk about?
I have to tell you that we were in Charlotte, and we went by the Speedway. Same deal. It was empty, and it was like, hey, let's go in there. So we went walking in there, and I got to scurry up the flagman's, the flagman hangs over there in the little tower. I got to tell you, that is super scary. You're like way very out nice. over the pavement and stuff. It was, you gotta have, you know, you got to be fairly brave. I could only think of, well, the only thing speeding under us was a van.
Yeah, you could, for like a
10-passenger van.
It was like for $50, they'd put you in this van, and you could drive 100 miles an hour on this track. Well, on that track, 100 miles an hour is like a Volkswagen in the slow lane.
It was actually funny. He looked like he was in the sand.
Wall. Yeah. Yeah, it was like, it was pretty.
So anyway.
Not exciting.
We've all had our, now we've totally confessed that, and other people are busy analyzing us.
Wouldn't they just love to know that we all have group every week together?
Obviously, it's not on Skype because we can't figure out how to work it.
No, it's not on Skype because I can't figure out how to get through. Or they block me. I think my phone number's blocked. They won't let me in.
There's a little red light that goes off. It's him again.
Oh, Dr. Lyle's on. Okay, listen.
Yeah, forget that.
Shut it down.
Make the phone busy.
Either that or everybody get on. It's going to be fun. So I think we actually
You're supposed to be the security expert.
We have to actually take a break, I think, because we've screwed around so much. What the hell?
This is a good show for you.
We ran the commercials long trying to get you on. We
pride ourselves in being very informative.
Do we have to take a break, Bob? Is it a rule? Are we doing that? What are we doing?
Is it a rule?
Yes.
It is a rule.
It's a rule. You've got to pay the light bill.
I hate rules. I'm so bad with rules.
All right.
We make them up as we go along.
Exactly.
Well, this will be a
quick break. Which is how all rules should be. Really swift break. We're here with our friend Dr. Lyle Rapacki. We're going to come back and talk about serious things here in 2 minutes. That was the comedy portion of the program, and sorry, that's the best we have. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my give a damn's busted. It's a riot. Throw back a bottle of beer. It's a riot. A bullet comb through your cold black hair. It's a riot. Throw back a bottle of beer. It's a riot. A bullet comb through your cold black hair. Blow, daddy!
Okay,
you could only wish it was that kind of a riot going on.
Yeah, not just because we were goofing off in the first segment, but...
that was a riot.
That was a riot.
That was a riot.
Yeah, we're old, so that kind of riot is where you laugh. But the other kind of riot is where you burn down Starbucks and all sorts of other stuff. And Dr. Rapacki sent us a terrific article about the Oath Keepers. He's a charter member of Oath Keepers, so he would know about this. And apparently they infiltrated some subversive groups. Do tell.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Do tell.
Well, we're seeing across the country, not in any one particular state, but in multiple states, simultaneously almost, a number of disruptions, civil disorders. And while it appears like they're mostly students, that's how it's being portrayed to the public because it just looks more cute that way. We do have students, who are disenfranchised. We have students that are coming out of colleges with, you know, bachelors in pottery making and women's studies, and they can't get employed because they really don't know anything. They are militant, and they're confused, and they're enjoying march-ins, sit-ins, because this is a lot of fun. That's one group of people that are comprising these disorders. Another group are communists. That sounds funny in this day and age, but they are card-carrying communists. They dislike immensely America, capitalism. They want the communist social structure and political structure in play. Black Lives Matter is a assimilated member of it. La Raza is another. And there are a number of groups that make up this communist umbrella. The third group, and what the report that I sent y'all talked about also as being the most serious and dangerous, are the anarchists. These are people who literally despise America, the United States, law and order as the United States has it established. And they are working with great impunity to disrupt the Judeo-Christian heritage of the United States, the culture of the United States, the systems of the United States, and are actively recruiting young, predominantly white, which is interesting, predominantly young white males to join them. They are extremely well-trained, very connected. They're well-funded. It has been determined there's roughly 50,000 of these. Now, when you add communist groups and liberal socialists and all these students, of course, the numbers are inflated. But when you're looking at the anarchist groups, there are approximately 50,000 to 60,000 that make up the core of that. They literally are trained in social disruption. They are trained on how to shut down communities and disrupt businesses and to bring destruction. Now, that sounds funny maybe on the surface, like how do you bring destruction? Well, you just throw rocks. Well, okay, that would bring disruption. But when you get into higher forms of disorder where you literally destroy as well as disrupt a community's economic base, now you're looking at a little bit more serious, a little bit higher level of organization, and that's what these folks are doing. We've got all three factors working right now across this country. The thing that brings them together is that none of these three groups that I've identified at all believe in the conservative capitalistic modality. They no longer believe, or they've never believed, in the rule of law as the United States practices it. They don't believe in capitalism. They believe in the government taking care of everything and taking care of them. So there are some very serious problems. There are businesses that are very left-leaning. Ben & Jerry's, and I love Ben & Jerry's, but we've stopped eating Ben & Jerry's. But Ben & Jerry's, for instance, gives monies. I think the last time their records were made public last year, they gave over $20,000 to socialist and communist groups like this. But there are other groups, other companies, other organizations, other businesses that give serious monies to these three types of organizations.
Now, Lyle, these groups, are these new, or are these groups that have just basically come out of the woodwork here in the last, I don't know, since December? I mean, they've all been around, but they just haven't really been active. Is that correct?
Oh, great. That's a great point. They have been around, but they haven't been well organized within themselves, much less interactive. And now that has changed. Black Lives Matter, that's a rather newer, if we can, group or organization. It wasn't around 10 years ago, 5 years ago. But it's been around the last 2 to 3 years in a very demonstrative fashion. Black Lives Matter has teamed up with La Raza, that's been around for quite a while, and the Islamic fundamentalists. So there you have three separate groups, but they have now worked together for a common core, I'm sorry, common cause, which is to bring down the United States.
And do these
groups? That's a great question you're asking. That's a great question because some of these groups are newer. That's correct. Some, like Little Ross, has been around for,
right.
Oh my gosh, going back to the 70s, 1970s.
So as they pull together and work as a united front, are the folks that fund these groups, are they all on the same page as well? I mean, do they care if they fund Black Lives Matter that they're going to team up with La Raza or you
or
know,
the communists or the anarchists?
It doesn't matter. I mean, they all just still throw money at it, huh?
Yeah. Does not matter. Again, that's a really penetrating question. Does not matter. From what we're able to determine, the monies are going in. Let me give you a word picture, if I may. Somebody can find fault with this, and that's okay. I don't, you know, I'm too old.
Oh, we'll point
it right
out. We
just won't take their call. No problem.
my good friend, since I'm old enough, Mark Twain once said, it's difference of opinion that makes horse races. And it's, you know, I'm fine with that. Somebody has a difference of opinion. But let me give you a word picture, because this might help explain. Let's say we have one pot, and you and Aaron and myself and other, we're putting our $5, $20, $50,000, whatever, into this pot. Well, it's coming from various sources or means, if you will, but it all goes into one pot, and then it's distributed. So after we get our $10 and $20 and $50,000 and, you know, $1,000, and we add it all up, there's $75,000 or $200 million, whatever. Well, then it's dispersed. That's what's taking place. You have the lesbian and gay community that's actively involved with Black Lives Matter, La Raza, and Islamic fundamentalists. I get a kick out of that because if you look at Islamic teachings, they despise the lesbian gay movement.
And that's why I asked the question. I mean,
they
absolutely
yeah.
are polar opposites. They don't believe in the same thing, but yet
right.
they'll fight side by side for communism.
But no. Stick with, if I may, if you'll play with me on this, for what? Go ahead and answer your own question. You're not going to be wrong. I mean, what's going on here? When you have various communist and radical socialist groups, and then you have anarchy groups that are neo-Nazi, pro-fascist groups coming together, how can they all do that? Well, what's their common enemy? What's their common goal?
Bring down the government.
Right, bring down the government and its various levels, institutions. Not just the economics of the United States, but the law and order, the administration of how our government functions. You've got the entire capitalistic corporate structure of business. I mean, they'll attack business. I get a kick out of the Berkeley riot that just took place, where these people were throwing chairs and stones and rocks or something at Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where do they think the money comes from?
Well, I was going to say you're biting the hand that feeds you.
Right, and I guess that's another part of my question is
why do they continue to support
them? What are they looking to gain? Let's say they are very effective at bringing down these different programs. What do they think they're going to replace it with?
Well, they haven't thought that far through, except I'm sure if you get into the communist groups here, they are adherents at bringing in the Communist Manifesto to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's what their goal is, to do away with the Judeo-Christian heritage of the United States and to do away with our capitalistic republic. They want to institute a communist government and culture, if you will, in the United States. So that's their goal, and whatever they have to do to achieve it, they don't really care.
And that's because they can look around the world and see how successful all the other communist nations are?
I can't tell you that this is rational.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's totally not rational.
Students, yeah, if you look at the students, for instance, that were earmarked on what's considered still in many circles traditional media, which I don't think they are, but anyway, traditional media, they had the cameras on these young 20-year-olds leading the charge, if you will. Most of them are ploys. They're being used They are the liberal socialists that are coming out of the higher educational system that basically is socialistic anyway and leans toward communism. They're not really militant. They're used to create dysfunction. They're used to for sit-ins and marches. They're on the tip of the sword, if you will. They're expendable.
Sure, and they make it look like it's a big protest.
Yeah. And I mean, they're the ones that really, personality-wise, have a tendency toward histrionic personality. You're kidding about my background. But histrionic personalities, personalities by nature, by diagnostic criteria, are usually pervasive and excessive emotional. They'll become emotional over a drop of a hat. They're attention-seeking. They love thrills. A histrionic personality lives for the moment and lives for that emotionality rush. And if they can't get it, then they start to fall apart and crumble. So they're constantly looking for reinforcement. You take people like that, they don't think rationally, they don't think long-term, they don't really have a plan. And if you look at Waters' World, that's the TV, okay,
right.
A lot of times he'll be talking to 20-somethings, and a lot of them are histrionic. They're very emotionally based. They're not rational. They really don't have any insight, very little insight. They're very impressionistic. They lack detail. You ask them a very specific question, they really can't answer it. They don't know. They don't really have an answer. They're just living in the moment. Well, that's kind of a histrionic individual, and you'll see that in these riots up the front. They're the ones, the young kids, that are the foot soldiers, if you will. The communists really are a different breed. They are the thinkers. They are the ones that are attempting to push together all their different groups, like I said, Black Lives Matter, La Raza, et cetera, and come together for a common bond, and that is to overthrow the United States. The anarchists are the ones that really are the deeper thinkers. They're more organized. They're the ones usually behind the pack. They're the ones that are the enforcers that are pushing the people forward. They're the ones that will take the young kids as they start to turn and run away and stop them and turn them back into the fray. The anarchists are far more organized than anyone ever thought. If you go back, and none of you are old enough, I am, but you go back to the 1968 Chicago convention for president, and there was big turmoil with Hubert Humphrey, the Vietnam War and all that. You saw anarchists there. Well, those people have now grown up, and they are in their 60s, and they're organizing a lot of this. They are the former socialists. They're the former members of different communist parties. But now they're old enough and, quote-unquote, wise enough that they have organized a lot of this. And that's what we're seeing from a law enforcement standpoint, is this is not just a bunch of kids that are disingenuous or disagreeing with, be it Trump or the policies of the United States. These are very serious and dedicated individuals who intend to collapse the United States.
Well, now, what if...
hold on. We have to take a really quick break.
All right, I have a burning question.
Ooh.
Yeah, so we'll hit it when we come back.
Do you want to throw out some histrionics for us so we can illustrate what this looks like?
Well, yeah.
Do you feel terrified?
I'm not terrified, but I want to talk about these college professors that get these kids all cranked up, and then they want to stand back and go, oh, my God, they're burning down the Starbucks.
But they don't say that. They don't.
No, they don't.
They disappear.
Yeah, they're now they're victims.
Well, you guys are right on.
Yeah,
right. A lot of this is taught in higher education.
They're giving them the day off of classes. I mean, we had a student in
absolutely
talking last
week.
It's being taught
in high schools also and junior highs. It's dribbled all the way down that far. Most Americans are still asleep. They still don't really get it.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back, because I see that as
well. We can't think about it because then no one could hear us. So we'll have to talk about it.
All right, we'll talk.
If we act it out, they can't hear it either.
I'm gonna karate chop you is what I'm gonna do.
Yeah! I have to go because Bill's gonna karate chop me. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Two
Wow, so we could have predicted the future had we paid attention to the words in that song, huh?
Well, I think you just go back and listen to about 90% of the 60s and 70s music, and you'll find what's coming next.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So, Lyle, let's get back on this thing with the with the professors.
Focus.
And don't you think that they're partly responsible for lighting these kids up and turning them loose and then they want to cry, oh my gosh, they're breaking windows.
But they don't ever say anything.
They don't. They act appalled. Like, I mean, no, they don't even do that. Yeah, they're happy. What's the matter with them?
One of the instigators in the Berkeley riot teaches on the faculty, and he's become identified. His picture's been put forward publicly, which was quite a shock to the movement because they made it look like Berkeley, the faculty staff, were separated out and had no knowledge of this, which turned out to be false. So true to your statement there, we find across the country a lot of faculty in many places, not just the main universities, but junior colleges, are not just leftward-leaning, but they really promote an Agenda 21, which is a communist agenda. Agenda 21, or now it's called Agenda for the 21st Century or Agenda 2030. I mean, there's a couple of different names.
Oh, they have to keep changing the name because they get
found out. Yeah, they keep it more relevant. That's how they figure. But it's communism. And people still, we have the Super Bowl in about an hour or so, and so everything's good. We have Super Bowl and, you know, things are fine. But all the while here, you have people who have adhered to the communist platform. And this is just sounds so funny to talk about today, especially if you look out your windows in Northern California and you see a lot of beautiful landscape, et cetera, and life is a little bit more serene. So it's hard to believe that while you're looking out your windows there or going about your normal activities, there are people who are attempting to bring down the United States and do not want America first. One of the rallying cries between all these groups is against Trump because Trump has very clearly stated, make America great. And that's our rallying cry to put America first. So you asked earlier in the program what might be one tie that brings them all together. You can take a look at the immigration executive order he signed banning immigration for about 90 days until they could kind of figure out what's going on here. And that was one thing that brought all of these groups together, is that he is attempting to literally put America and America's interests first. And all of these different groups detest that. And when you've grown up in high school and college not learning the history of the United States, the foundations of this country, why we have fought the wars we have, and what our belief systems are, much less how we were founded, well, then you'll fall for anything. And that's what's taking place, is that you have a lot of socialists, for instance, liberal socialists coming out of college who have no foundation in the United States history, economic system, our belief systems, our philosophies. There's no foundation. Mm-hmm. And so they're willing to go along with anything that seems kind of very exciting and new. The other thing adding to that is, again, you've got a lot of people who are frustrated, angry, scared, because there are no jobs. They virtually, our economy is in some serious, serious trouble. And when you have people graduating from graduate schools who have no idea what they can do, they have no idea where they can get a job, they're just floundering. That's going to add to this emotionality that we've been talking about. And they'll feed off of this. So when you have anarchists who know how to motivate people, and they do, and they know how to psychologically stir people up, and they do, well, all they have to do is look for a pool of people that are histrionic, and there's a huge pool out there of young people in their 20s who have no foundation. No real foundation. And so they're easy, they're culpable to get caught up in something like this, and that's what we're seeing.
And I think what you're saying is it really holds true. When you look at these interviews, when they go out and they talk to the kids holding the signs and protesting, they all function really well in a large group. They're loud, they scream and shout, they're organized. But if you pull them out and talk to them one-on-one, you really... You really see how much they really know or don't know. They don't have a clue. They have no concept of American history. They don't know who our government leaders are. They don't really even know what the hell they're protesting half the time.
Go ahead, and again, that's just a great segue here, because the signs, those are all made up. The signs are pre-printed. A lot of money goes into all of this stuff, which is lost on the masses. But here's a quote from an interview being asked of one of the rioters in Berkeley. It sounds to me that you're demonstrating against Trump. What is it against Mr. Trump that you don't like? Well, I neither love nor hate Trump. I agree with about half of what he's done and disagree with the other half, but I can look at it rationally. I am not part of any political party, and I have no agenda other than living a life of freedom and peace. When his actions align with that, I'm pleased. When his actions threaten my freedom or peace, I'm displeased. But for the love of cats, I can be displeased without setting myself on fire, sobbing on camera, and doing all sorts of terrorist things. Well, what the hell did you just say?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I got hung up on the love of cats. I was like, what?
Yeah, where did that come in?
Yeah, where did that come in?
And I was quoting. This was a quote. I mean, what? I mean, I have to tell you guys, and I'm old, but it's like, it hurts my head sometimes watching this stuff, because it's just like, I really don't follow it. I can't. It's worse than seventh grade dribble.
I had a conversation with a young woman last week who is a teacher, okay? She's a teacher, and after listening to her for about, I was on the phone about 3 minutes, I'll give her 4 minutes, even though I think it was 10, it just felt like 10. Everything she said, I feel like it's so scary, I feel like everything is so out of control, I feel this, I feel that, I feel the other thing, I feel that. And I said, you know, sweetie, I'm old, and I get it, I'm older than you are. And you know what, I'm just going to say something that might be shocking, but if you can, like, hear me out, maybe it'll make sense to you sometime later. I said, you know, honestly, I got to tell you, nobody cares how you feel. And it was like dead silence, and she goes, well, what? And I said, but see, in fairness, you don't care how I feel either. She goes, no, I do. I said, no, you don't. You didn't call me to find out how I feel. Do you want to listen to me for the rest of the day and come and be in charge of my feelings? I mean, and I want an answer. She goes, well, no. I said, that's what I'm saying. So let's talk about fact. You've been led down this weird road where you get to discuss feelings about everything. I said, you know, you'll be a happier wife. You'll be a better mom. You'll be a better employee if you just blow the feelings thing off and deal in facts. It's much easier. Much, much easier.
God, what a hard case you
what
are.
What a hag.
Boy, no wonder I had a hard time getting on today. My feelings were hurt.
No
and they
kidding.
Wouldn't let me through.
But I mean, you know, on behalf of all the people who really wanted to say that, it's like, okay. You know, and the thing is, she by the end of the conversation, she goes, well, I do kind of understand what you're saying. I said, seriously, try it. For a whole day, like put a rubber band around your wrist and snap it really hard every time you use the word feelings. Because feelings are stupid and nobody cares about them, for real. You know, it's just
when you go back to an educational system that no longer, and I taught at 2 universities, and I saw this years ago, it was just beginning, and it was scary. You had university-level students. We're not talking high school, junior high now. We're talking university-level. And they were no longer trained or even interested in critical thinking.
Yes.
They just wanted to know what was on the test so they could study to the test and get past the class and move on. They could care less about learning. They could care less about becoming critical thinkers. And when you ask them open-ended questions, they would melt. They're like little buttercups. They couldn't deal with this. They wanted to know closed-ended questions. For instance, if you said, our founding fathers believed in freedom. Okay, you could disagree with that, but that's a simple, closed statement. But if you turned that around and said, what was the belief system of our founding fathers? Oh my gosh, I mean, they couldn't deal with that. They couldn't answer the question clearly, and they did not know how to go and investigate how to find the answers, so then they could come back and discuss it. Even if they discussed it in a difference of opinion, at least they were thinking about it. That's not taught anymore. You're not taught in a higher level of training, be it universities, grad schools, how to be critical thinkers. You're not taught how to get past your feelings and get into a problem or a topic or a subject matter and dissect it and look at it. It's not done. They've dumped down these people.
It's going to be really hard to teach those people how to.
That girl, the female that phoned you, that's what you're seeing.
Yeah, spooky. It's totally spooky. Well, we need to take a really quick break or our advertisers' feelings will be hurt. and the station owner, his feelings will be hurt, and his wife's, her feelings. We're going to hurt everybody's feelings if we don't take a quick break.
Yeah, so stop it right now.
But I can guarantee you'll feel better if you go to WeThePeopleRadio.us and look at some of the fun stuff we have on there.
I'm going to go get a puppy.
And if you sponsor us, you'll feel a lot better. We have a puppy in the car.
You didn't play with my crayons, did you?
That sounds a little creepy. I got to go.
Nothing more than feeling. Trying to forget my feelings of love.
Whee! Look who's coming!
Here comes Susie Snowflake, dressed in a snow white gown.
My favorite song.
Tap, tap, tapping at your window pane to tell you she's in town. Here comes Susie Snowflake, soon you will hear her say, come out, everyone.
And I melted her by saying nobody cares about her feelings.
Yep, that was into her. Susie,
you're such a hater.
Well, I was.
Great music. That's great music.
That's a good one, huh? We're going to have to play that all year.
Yes, that's good.
Oh, my gosh. So, okay, you know, just from a, I think I already know the depressing answer, but, okay, from a professional point of view here with all your advanced degrees on how people actually think and work, how do we fix these people or get around them or shut them up or, I don't know, whatever we do with them?
Oh, no.
What do we do with these people?
You have to set down very clear and strong boundaries, and then you have to enforce them. You're not going to fix these people.
Oh, so you mean the police standing around, not doing anything during these, quote, protests while they burn down the Starbucks, et cetera? That's probably not sending the right message?
Yeah, very clearly. That's actually aiding and abetting these folks because it's sending mixed messages. They already have a disrespect and an opinion of law enforcement that's not going to be fixed by sitting and reasoning with them. They are already emotionally and somewhat psychologically, meaning their thought processes, are out of control. They need very strong boundaries. And then those boundaries have to be enforced immediately and repetitively because they will violate them. And it's a slow repetition of enforcing boundaries. It's sort of like raising a child because that's what you're doing. You're raising children who happen to be 28, 29, 30 years of age, but they are emotionally really stunted. They're crippled. I'm being very candid. I'm not being funny. They're really crippled. We've got a very, very horrendous situation. Budding in our country. We've got maybe two generations of people who, are not going to be very productive.
Yeah. And so then, add to them the other folks that are just mad that things didn't go their way in November.
Right. Well, could I jump in on that?
Yeah, please.
When you have a former president of the United States, Obama, who is only out of office 2-3 weeks, and he's encouraging these types of riots, come on, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, that's...
And so they see this, they hear this, they see and hear that type of dribble coming at them to encourage them. That's all the encouragement they really need to continue in their maladaptive ways. We've got a serious problem here, guys.
Yeah, and it really is not a respecter of age. It isn't just people in their 20s.
No, it's not. No, in fact, that's a great question. In New York, just last week, in Brooklyn, 1,000 Yemeni American stores did a bodega strike. Now, bodega is a wine, so 1,000 of Yemeni Americans, which is interesting, but 1,000 Yemeni people of Yemeni background closed their stores, be it various ma-and-pa stores, wineries, corner groceries, things like that, and went to the Brooklyn Hall to pray and rally against Trump. They're so upset over Trump and what he's doing that they had to call a strike, disrupt all that commerce and employees, and take off and have a day of prayer and rallying in Brooklyn. Now, why did I throw that in there? Because across this nation, what we are seeing is a breakdown of the culture of the United States. We are seeing literally the breakdown of what has been encouraged for many years now, which is you do not have to come to the United States and assimilate.
Right. No, you don't have to show your allegiance. You used to have to do all that.
And the last 8 years, it was all about, you know, how to be wounded. We are, believe it or not, out of time. How crazy is that?
I know.
It's wrong.
You got the clock. Who's running it?
I know. You got, Jeff, we need to have you back for like a 2-hour stint. There's just so much
stuff.
There
is a lot to talk about.
You have to let me in on the phone. I can't get through the phone. Okay. You guys are wonderful hosts. I mean, thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Lyle Rapacki. We will have you on again because we think you're awesome. Have a fun Super Bowl Sunday.
Checks in the mail. Checks in the mail.
Yes.
Bye, y'all. Have a great time in Northern California. Go Packers.
Exactly.
Bye-bye.
All righty, folks. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.